Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
So much going on in Washington, D.C. under this new Trump administration. It's been like a whirlwind, a tornado. If you're a Trump supporter, you probably couldn't be happier. But if you're a Democrat, you're probably a little concerned about the pace with which everything is moving and thought it would be a good time to get a handle on it, not from an analyst, but from somebody who is in there, who's voting, who's dealing with these issues on a daily basis and can shed some light, certainly from the perspective of the Democrats. So happy that Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois' 9th District can join me. Congresswoman, thank you. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's really good to be with you. Thank you.
So there's so many different places to start. And of course, of current news is the travel ban. The administration officials say it's not a ban, but the president has called it a ban. How do you, in your mind, wrestle the difference between a president's right to guard our national security and the fact that it caused such havoc in implementing it?
Actually, I don't look at it that way at all. I look at it as a fact that on a week ago, on a Saturday, a family in Park Ridge who wanted to come back into this country, the wife is a citizen, their tiny child is a citizen, and the husband was a legal permanent resident, a green card holder, but they're Iranian. And they were held up, and it took a lot of work in order to get them back. I look at it from the standpoint of a group of 13 families that had made arrangements finally to help resettle a Syrian family in Park Ridge. And they had the apartment ready. They had food in the refrigerator. And when this ban was put into place, the family was stuck. They didn't know where they had sold all of their belongings. When it was reinstated, it looks like they are going to be able to finally come. It's these personal stories. Another was about a translator, an Iraqi translator who worked with the Americans, risking his life because that's a dangerous thing to do, who wanted to come to the United States of America for safety. He loves our country. He has served our country. But because he is Iraqi, he was covered under that ban. So there are just so many people that were really hurt by this. But, you know, the administration tried to say, oh, there's only like 120 people or whatever. Nobody else
is affected.
I think
he said 110.
What was it, 100?
He said 110 or something out of the hundreds of thousands that were coming in the country and approved in court not to be true.
But it was not only not true about that, but millions of Americans have fear now in their heart. People who have a green card, can I travel outside the country? They're being warned not to if they are from one of those countries. So many people now are fearful of all kinds of bullying that's been going on. There's been an uptick in bullying since the Trump campaign, et cetera. As you know,
I'm going to talk to you about that. The incident at the synagogue. Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Right.
Well,
that's the point of view. You know, the lawyers are taking care of whether or not it's unconstitutional, which I think it is. I agree that it's immoral. But I'm also very concerned at how dangerous it is. I think that this ban has made America less safe, not more safe. So that's a really important consideration.
One of the concerns that I have, and as you said, it's playing out through the courts, but of course President Trump's comment recently referring to the judge who put a hold on the ban or stay on it and calling him a so-called judge. I was on our morning news today saying, you know, it's one thing to attack a position of a judge or a decision of a judge. It's another thing when you attack the judge. And I've got real concerns with that, but it seems as though anything that comes up, Congresswoman, it all gets personal. You're either on his plus list or your minus list, And I don't know how you function for 4 years that way.
Well, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. Remember, this isn't the first time. He called a judge who questioned Trump University, investigating that. He suggested it was because he was a Mexican. And in fact, this judge was of Mexican descent, born in the United States. So this kind of personalizing his attacks on, I think it really is an effort to undermine institutions of our government, including the judiciary. And I think that is very, very dangerous. I think people are starting to see through the tweets, through his comments. I mean, I for one am very, very concerned, and a lot of Republicans are concerned when he equated Russia and the United States when it came to killing people. Are you kidding me?
Sean Spicer, and you have the people of the administration who, of course, walked that stuff. I'm not sure he actually walked it back, but he walked it sideways, you know, as he basically says, you know, let's understand. The mantra seems to be, don't listen to what Trump says. Just go with what he means or what he does, and we're supposed to interpret it that way.
Well, let's talk then about what he does. You know, Donald Trump promised in his inaugural address that he was returning power to the people away from Washington. Throughout his campaign, he was really critical of Goldman Sachs and Wall Street, you know, the billionaires and millionaires. He was going to be on the side of ordinary people. And yet, if you look at the things that he has done, including the appointments that he's made, this is really a Goldman Sachs cabinet. Is a billionaire, millionaire cabinet that he has appointed, really put in places of power. He wants to undo protections that have been put in place for the environment, for Wall Street. He wants to undo the legislation that was passed in order to finally put the reins on Wall Street and protect ordinary consumers. And, so what he's done, his very first act would raise the mortgage rates of people that had FHA loans, et cetera, by about $500 a year. So this is not someone who has stood up for ordinary people. And I think it's a real betrayal of the middle class and low-income people.
And yet he had, 46 million people vote for him. And, of course, when he has the bully pulpit, he says, if you read a poll that makes him look bad at NBC or CBS or CNN or ABC or anybody else, it's all lies. Don't believe any of that. Only believe the good ones. And while Congresswoman, you see through that, and I see through that. I'm sorry, as a member of the media, I see through that. But, you know, I'm not sure his supporters do. And I say that because – go on Facebook, go to social media, these attacks on the media, it's get rid of all you media people. I mean, there are people buying this stuff.
You know, CNN had a really sensitive piece on Saturday night that interviewed people who were Trump supporters in a small town in Kentucky. And these are people who were so desperate for their lives to be better. The jobs had left their community. People were working, you know, if they could get them minimum wage jobs, a couple, two or three of them, in order to make ends meet. They had been so disappointed and felt like this was, they hoped, a chance for things to get better, for the pendulum to swing their way and away from the rich who were, you know, making money hand over fist and government who wasn't really protecting them. And so far, we have not seen one single policy. We have seen Donald Trump unwilling to release his taxes so that we know how much money he has made and where he's made it and his relationships with Russia. He wants to undo the consumer protections that limit credit card companies, for example, in the ways that they can exploit ordinary consumers. It's just been one thing after another. And I just feel like there is going to be a sense of not only disappointment, that a sense of betrayal that people are going to feel. And besides which, he really hasn't been able to keep his promises, promises that were ridiculous from the start. You know, he promised on day one he was going to repeal Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And now he said, just I think it was today or yesterday, that it probably won't be until the end of the year. And the reason for that?
He's actually brought it into next year. He's saying next year now.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because millions and millions of Americans, whether they're on the expanded Medicaid or they have considerable money and are on private insurance, they don't want to go back to the days when you couldn't get insurance or you paid exorbitant rates because of pre-existing conditions. They don't want to hit lifetime caps if they have some sort of a chronic illness and they're going to run out of their benefit. And they want to keep their children on their policies until they're 26 years old. That covers everybody, not just people that are in the marketplace, that get a subsidy, or on Medicaid. It's everyone in America now that has those benefits, and they don't want to lose them. And people are showing up at town hall meetings all over the country and saying, don't take my health care away. You know, give us a, you know, some sort of a replacement. But there's a reason that we haven't seen a replacement for 7 years. It's because it's really hard to do that. The Affordable Care Act needs fixing. We agree, but it shouldn't be repealed.
And the only good news is Republicans are starting to use the repair word a little bit. Paul Ryan tried to walk that back, but I don't know. My gut tells me it'll go in that direction because it has to go in that direction.
It has to go in that direction, and people, especially those Republicans who are up for re-election now, this idea of repeal what they have, you know, take away something that they have already seen the benefit. For women, the Affordable Care Act has been an absolute bonanza because women used to pay in Illinois up to 48% more over a lifetime for their health care because being a woman, in essence, was having a pre-existing condition.
Right.
And the availability of family planning, of contraception at no out-of-pocket cost has really been a great thing for young women in particular.
So, Congresswoman, what this has got to be so frustrating for you. The general question is, what do Democrats do? I mean, with all due respect, you can stop nothing. Look at the cabinet picks. Betsy DeVos, right? That was the best chance you had. Not you. I know it's a Senate vote. But the best chance to keep somebody from the cabinet, not going to happen. What are Democrats? What's the strategy? People are saying they want new blood. They want new energy. And the Nancy Pelosi is back. And nothing against Nancy Pelosi. But people just want to see new blood. How do you get Democrats back and excited?
Well, first of all, I think what you're seeing and you saw in the Women's March, which was very diverse in every possible way, including men as well as women marching, young women, old women, minority women, immigrants. There were a lot of different messages on the signs, but there was this sense of we are going to resist the policies of this Trump administration that are hurting so many people. And, you know, there were women of all economic levels that were marching together, and as I said, and men and families. So I am seeing, as someone who's been a lifetime organizer, and sometimes it's pulling teeth to get people to a meeting to discuss some sort of a policy, people are organizing themselves. They are turning out on a moment's notice. You know, there are millions of people all around America who were protesting on that Saturday, the day after the election. We are seeing thousands and thousands of people at airports on this Muslim ban standing together in solidarity. We are seeing people going to town hall meetings, protesting around health care issues, around environmental issues. And I don't see that ending. I see that growing and growing. And this isn't some sort of a centralized organizing effort. These are communities. These are ordinary people that are putting together their own groups that are communicating over social media. You know, we had one big meeting, by the way. 1,400 people showed up. It was mostly around healthcare, but not exclusively. And afterwards, we had a Twitter clinic. And we invited people who wanted to, you know, if Donald Trump can tweet, so can you, who wanted to learn how to do that. They came into the clinic, standing room only, with their cell phones, and we had a Twitter expert come in and help them set up their phones in order to do that.
So you're saying these are not
happening.
Sean Spicer says that all these marchers, they're all being paid, George Soros and others. This is a paid movement.
I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous on its face. There definitely were fundraising efforts, GoFund sites that were raising money for buses so people could afford to. But these were community-based efforts, people who wanted to put that kind of activity together. If you look at that march, millions of people, there were tens of thousands of organizers who put that together. And believe me, no one was paid that I know of to go either in Chicago or to Washington or any of the, you know, hundreds of cities, little towns across this country where people were out and marching.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I have a sense. I still think Democrats are still looking for leadership, and I still think President Obama can be that person. You see all sorts of, you know, comments and things people say, you know, come on, Barack, get out of vacation. You're done. We need you back here. One of the plus things is in that interview that that President Trump did with Bill O'Reilly, aside from all the Russia stuff, he also said when asked about President Obama, he said, he likes me. I just know he likes me, which is very important to President Trump, of course, to be liked. My question is, do you think that President Obama really is in a very good position, since Trump thinks he likes him, maybe he does, to potentially influence him, but also to come back in that leadership position for Democrats, to speak from
the citizen
pulpit?
Well, I do know the conversation before Trump was inaugurated about the Dreamers, about the young immigrants to this country who were brought by their parents but are now undocumented. Those are the people that Barack Obama protected through an executive order. He had a conversation with the president about it, and I think was, you know, pretty influential. It made it made Trump think twice about going after these people. Yes, but, you know, the most powerful voice right now in Donald Trump's ear is Steve Bannon.
And we're seeing that. I was going there next.
Pardon me?
I was going there next. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, well, I think that I think Barack Obama has said, and he said to the Democrats, that he would potentially go into the conversation about the Dreamers. But I think he's being very careful, as many ex-presidents are, to, you know, not be the headliner on this. And, you know, because of this mass uprising that I'm seeing around the country, I'm not sure that we need a single voice. I think that there's going to be, you know, even the Tea Party, when it emerged in 2009, coming to town hall meetings, it's hard to say who exactly was the leader of that grassroots effort. I know I was, in a town meeting where the Tea Party was yelling at me, no Obamacare, and, it was very uncomfortable. There were a lot of people there. And I think that's what we're seeing now, that people are not happy with what they're seeing from Donald Trump. And I think that number is going to grow as the promises are not fulfilled.
But Democrats want you to fight. I was talking to your colleague and friend, Mike Quigley, not too long ago, and one of the comments that he made to me, it was either on air or to me, either way, but he would certainly acknowledge saying this, is that he says Democrats shouldn't walk the path that Republicans did in the Obama administration, fighting everything. I mean, President Obama could have said, let's give the whole world a dollar each, and they would have fought him. I mean, it didn't matter what he proposed. But Democrats want you to fight. Do you believe that Democratic elected officials should work with the president where they can on infrastructure, or should they be obstruct every step of the way as Republicans did and make the point?
I think that we should not obstruct when we can work with them. But I also agree with Mike Quigley about the fight. When the Democrats sat down on the floor in the House of Representatives and it got live streamed out through our own technological prowess, because they shut off the cameras, the Republicans did. Those of us who sat down, which was most of the Democrats, when we came home, people were saying, oh, thank you for that. We did not win anything, I'm sorry to say. We didn't get a vote on gun safety legislation. We didn't get a vote on universal background checks. But what they liked was they saw the fight. Having said that, if Donald Trump, who has campaigned on, we're not going to cut Social Security, we're not going to cut Medicare, we're not going to do those things, if he is serious about that, we're going to be with him. Because Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, is not. He has had legislation for a long time to turn Medicare into a voucher system. And Republicans for a long time, since George W. Bush, wanting to privatize Social Security. If they want to move on those things, but the president does not, he's going to find allies among the Democrats. We're going to be there every step of the way.
On the international front for just a little bit, I mean, I never thought we would worry about Australia as not being a friend. Who would, right?
Even Saturday Night Live, we went after those Aussies, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Yeah, those kangaroos, they're just taking over the world. And I mean, actually, I happen to be – I love Australia. And even the Canadian prime minister having to issue a statement about refugees. My question is – and Mexico, we don't even have to go there. My question is, when George W. Bush was president, I think a lot of relationships – while he did put a coalition together for the Iraq War, a lot of relationships got strained. Some people believe Barack Obama put the world back together behind America. Some don't. But – do you have concerns of what the world order is going to look like under 4 years of President Trump?
It's really, really frightening. And that's, let's talk about some of the Muslim world and the Muslim countries who I think are very concerned about what he has done on the Muslim band. The relationship with Mexico, that was another promise. Who's going to build the wall, pay for the wall? Mexico. Mexico's not going to pay for the wall, and this has certainly damaged the relationship with Mexico, and once again, I think created fear and confusion among our south of the border immigrants. I think that this scary attitude toward Putin, the fact that during the campaign, he actually entertained the idea of using nuclear weapons and talking positively about, making sure our arsenal is big enough. This is a man now that has the nuclear codes in his pocket at all times, and yet in the middle of the night, and acts so erratically. I think that a lot of people are very concerned, including people who are in the intelligence and the security and the international relations community. Republicans and Democrats are very concerned about that, and I think we should be. I think his questioning of NATO, one of the most important alliances that we've ever had, it's very, very troubling. To say the least.
Just curious, and this is a kind of a hypothetical, but if he were decide to go nuclear for some reason, that because he got angry at somebody and not for the other reasons. I mean, one of the points that humans understand, that Americans understand, is his power when it comes to that is to be unchecked. It is just the way it is. I'm just curious, if, Lord forbid, anything like that ever happened, do you think somewhere along the way there would be a check? Somebody goes, no, we just can't do this?
Oh, I would certainly hope so. In the White House, the National Security Council now, however, he added Steve Bannon to the National Security Council and actually demoted the Director of National Intelligence and the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to be at the table.
Now, Reince Priebus said they're allowed to visit when they want to.
They're allowed to visit when they want to. Really?
That's what he said.
I mean, that's fine. But the idea is that these are people who have a decision-making place at the table. And we've never had a chief strategist who's had a place at the table, a person himself who, was head of Breitbart News, was a place that entertained white supremacists, a place that trafficked in fake news. This is a serious problem. Yeah. A man who I think is probably the one who said that Jews should not be named in the Holocaust Memorial Remembrance Day statement by the president. This is a very, very, I think, a very dangerous person to have to be the chief one that has the ear of the President of the United States, certainly when it comes to these serious issues of the use of nuclear power, of foreign affairs, and the most important domestic issues as well.
So with regard to that Holocaust Memorial Day or Remembrance Day, where they didn't mention Jews at all in the statement, which I'm neutral on air, but that's one, I'll be honest. I mean, that was just wrong. And we have seen an increase in vandalism, as you said. You issued a statement, I believe, just yesterday, the day before, about the vandalism on the Loop synagogue downtown, which I attended, actually, over Yom Kippur to hear the great Dudu Fischer, who was there as the cantor, which if you've never heard him, by the way, I need to take you. You need to go hear him when he's here for High Holiday Services. But my point is my sense that these instances seem to be growing, or is it? Am I just being sensitive to it?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, this is documented, that these instances of anti-Semitism, of vandalism at synagogues and other Jewish places. But it is also true that the attacks on Muslims have been greatly increased, but we've also seen it among anybody who looks brown or black or wears something covering their head as women, or turbans of any sort as men. All of these individuals have been, and children even. I mean, it's happened to people on my staff. When they've been yelled at from a neighboring car, this was an Asian woman. Mm. When a Muslim family, the woman works for me, was yelled at by someone in a restaurant when they were celebrating a birthday, "You should get out of here. You should go back. You should go home." I don't know to where. They're Americans. And they left crying from the restaurant. Children at school are being taunted and called names and even beat up. So this is a serious problem, and it's a bigger problem since Donald Trump has been attacking people and being the chief bully, the chief cyber bully, if not more. I mean, he certainly said terrible things at his rallies too, and even encouraged violence, and said that he would pay his own money to defend people who did violence at his rallies. You know, we knew, a lot of us knew before the election, that he seemed unfit, but I think that we're starting to really see that, and everybody's starting to see that play out as in his presidency.
Yeah, I'm watching our time, and I know that you've got to get back to the floor. I have just two quick things to ask you. Number
sure.
one, related to what you just said, one of your colleagues from California, Congressman Ted Lieu, has been calling for a psychological evaluation for the president. The first time I heard him do it, I thought it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. But I've heard him several times. It's not so tongue-in-cheek. Is that just kind of a, out of the mainstream Democratic congressman calling for that, or is that the kind of thing we may hear more of?
You know, I think that it sort of makes sense to ask about the mental stability of someone that has control over nuclear weapons, and that at least has some curiosity about issues, international issues, and taking positions that actually could jeopardize the safety of the United States.
Finally, Congresswoman, look, we have Trump supporters, Trump detractors listening to this podcast, and so I'll kind of let you bring us to a close however you wish. But for the Democrats, what can you give them words of hope, because they're feeling really dejected, but can you do it in a way that for the Trump supporters who are listening in, can kind of listen to you and go, I get it. I understand.
Well, we as Democrats want to be clear that though you didn't hear it, I guess, in this election, that the policies of the Democratic Party are the ones that really do lift up workers, lift up not just poor people, but want to build a middle class where people can have security when they come home, not a full plate of worry about how they're going to be able to afford to send their kids to college. And I do feel that Americans across this country now are ready to fight for those things, that they're ready to say, you know, we're not going to leave it to Washington at all, to Republicans or Democrats. We're going to be out there fighting for policies that are actually going to make our lives better. And we want to work with everyone who wants to do that, because it's not a Democratic or Republican thing where people are suffering and people are worrying and people are falling out of the middle class and people aren't doing, you know, their children aren't doing as well as they are. And so I hope this turns into a broad-based movement that welcomes everybody who wants to make sure that this country goes into, you know, further into the 21st century, leading in jobs, leading in prosperity, leading in security, and, yes, leading in human rights and civil rights.
Congresswoman Jen Schakowsky of the 9th District in Illinois, I can't thank you enough. This was a good amount of your time, and I know it is valuable time. So please, on behalf of the WGN Plus audience, myself, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.